Hello, everyone. Welcome to Amazing Avenue Audio's Unformidable. I'm Rob Wolf, and tonight, in episode three, I think. Dear God, I've lost track already. But we're going to take another dive into Met's history and look back at a less heralded Met. Tonight, we're going to talk about an old friend named Wilmer. No, not that beloved Wilmer. I mean, that jersey-tugging, teary-eyed walk-off king is legitimately unforgettable for all of us Met fans. No, today we're going back to the very beginning, or very close to the beginning, to an not quite original Met, but a 1962 Met from that original team with a pretty cool name, Wilmer David Vinegarbend Mizell. Vinegarbend came to the Mets in May of 1962, so we're actually talking about someone your humble, oldish, unformidable narrator is too young to remember himself, but I saw the name and I just had to learn more about Vinegarbend Mizell. So as I said, he was not an original Met. He was traded to the Mets May 7th, 1962 by the Pittsburgh Pirates for Jim Marshall, and he was subsequently released by the 1962 Mets on August 4th, which marked the end of his 9-year Major League Baseball career. But he had quite the notable public life thereafter, as we'll discuss later. But before that, let's take a look at what bends in his baseball life led Vinegarbend Mizell to that beloved, bumbling 1962 team. So I gotta be honest, I was really hoping there was a better story here. I was basically picturing Harris from Major League telling some rookies, I just scuff a baseball by rubbing some vinegar on it or something. But Wilmer Mizell was born in the town of Vinegarbend, Alabama, population 50 at the time. As of the 2010 census, Vinegarbend's population is up to a booming 192. So apparently he just got that nickname because he's from Vinegarbend, Alabama. Although, cool, there are a number of stories about how the town got its name, one of which is that a container holding tons of vinegar apparently burst at a freight station near the river's bend. Thanks Wikipedia for that. But at any rate, Mizell got that nickname because of his hometown, or the town on his birth certificate. He was technically born across the state lines in Mississippi. Want to be thorough, but grew up in Vinegarbend, and he actually had a pretty decent playing career. Vinegarbend Mizell came up as a 21-year-old for the St. Louis Cardinals in 1951, and based on ERA Plus, at least, he was league average or better over each of his first 7 years. And when I was looking up his stats, here's a fun little nugget to see how baseball has changed over the last, 60 years. Vinegarbend led the league in strikeouts per 9 innings in each of his first 2 seasons with, get this, 1952, 6.916 strikeouts per 9 innings, and in 1953, 6.941 strikeouts per 9 innings. He was black ink, first in the NL, both of those years. So, these days that wouldn't even get you a minor league contract in the MLB. A classic erratic lefty, he also led the league in walks in his first season. So again, he made his debut in 52, and he pitched with the Cardinals consistently into 1959 when he made the All-Star team twice, as that was one of those years when they had 2 All-Star games. I think that was for players' pension pools that they had 2 All-Star games. I don't remember why, but he made both of them. But 1959 was his last full season with the Cardinals. In 1960, he was traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates with Dick Gray for Ed Bauta and Julian Javier. Anyway, I've heard of none of them until I looked into this podcast. But in his last stretch of decent baseball, Vinegar Bend closed the 1960 season with a 13-5 record down the stretch, helping the Pirates to a very famed pennant. And he did appear in two World Series games in that 1960 World Series, starting game three, surrendering four runs in a third of an inning in a 10-0 loss to the Yankees and Whitey Ford, and also contributing two scoreless innings of relief in another blowout loss in game five of the World Series. But of course, Vinegar Bend would end him earn himself a World Series ring when Bill Mazeroski famously ended that World Series with the first ever World Series walk-off home run, sending the Yankees down to defeat. So, a nice, well-deserved ring for Vinegar Bend, seeing the Yankees lose the World Series. So Mizell struggled badly in 1961. I don't know why I'd say Mizell. I just want to keep saying Vinegar Bend over and over. But anyway, he opened the season in 1962 in the Pirates rotation, where he had one solid start in the third game of the season against your New York Mets. In the Mets' third game of existence, Vinegar Ben Mizell threw seven innings of four-hit ball against our fledgling expansion team, surrendering only one unearned run and earning the last victory of his major league career as the Mets fell to 0-3.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Hey, listeners, this is Luke Thomas, show host at MMA Fighting. If you like mixed martial arts and combat sports, you should check out our weekly show, The MMA Hour. Each Monday, we speak with the top athletes of MMA, from world champions to rising stars. We also bring you in-depth analysis on technique in our Monday morning analyst segment, where we talk to some of the brightest minds in the game. Plus, we answer your questions regarding the latest news and headlines of the world of professional fighting. Find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I don't know. I guess the Mets weren't quite aware how horribly bad they were going to be, but they were left quite impressed. Impressed enough to acquire Vinegar Bend a month later in a trade with the Pirates for Jim Marshall. So Mizell went on to make 17 appearances for the team that inspired Casey to moan, "Can't anybody here play this game?" And unfortunately for Vinegar Bend, the answer to that question seemed to be not any longer. So Mizell made his Mets debut on May 12th, where he walked the only batter he faced, leading off the top of the ninth. The Mets got out of the inning, and it was a game Gil Hodges would win with a walk-off homer in the bottom of the ninth. So not a great Met debut for Vinegar Bend, but a rare victory. And then let's see. In his next appearance, he made his first of two starts for the Mets, and he actually recorded what you would record as a quality start, allowing three earned runs over six innings against the Cubs, and that was a game that the Mets would win in 10 innings, 6-5. And you know, I can't believe I've now looked up three games for the 1962 Mets in the course of doing this, and they won two of them. What are the odds of that? I mean, seriously, their winning percentage was what, 248, 250, 248, I think. So I'm sure someone could figure that out, but you know, math isn't my strong suit. But anyway, I digress. So after that start, he pitched almost exclusively out of the bullpen for the 62 Mets, starting only one more game, which looks to me like it was because it was the second game of a doubleheader against the Giants, and he was infinitely less successful in that start, allowing 4 runs over 2 2/3 innings. So Vinegar Bend would struggle mightily with the 62 Mets, which, I mean, is pretty much the story of everyone involved with the 62 Mets, isn't it? In his final Major League Baseball appearance, he allowed 6 runs and 5 walks in 2 1/3 innings against the Milwaukee Braves. That last appearance was July 25th, and then shortly thereafter, on August 4th of 1962, Vinegar Bend was released by the Mets, bringing an end to his Major League Baseball career. So his brief Met career he sported an ugly, but, you know, very 1962 appropriate 0-2 record with a 7.35 ERA and 25 walks against 15 strikeouts in 38 innings. I mean, that's as 62 Mets as you can get, isn't it? Yeah, but as a whole, he wrapped up his Major League Baseball career with a winning record, 90-88, with a 3.85 ERA. Since this is someone I never saw pitch, and I'm guessing a lot of our listeners may not have ever gotten the chance to see pitch, I was really curious, and I looked up some of his similarity scores on Baseball Reference, and a couple of pitchers he matched in his career were very similar, were Blue Moon Odom, Bob Knepper, and Danny Jackson. So I don't know, that gave me some context, or, you know, maybe some of those guys are still too old for you guys, in which case, I don't know, I can't help you much. But, you know, perhaps, I guess particularly because of the 86 playoffs, like, I saw Bob Knepper and I was like, oh, okay. At any rate, I thought I had this great one-liner about, you know, I guess if you get released by the 62 Mets, you know your baseball career is over. But I wasn't the first one to think of something like that, because, you know, looking at his post-Mets life, which, as I alluded to, is quite notable, I will note that he was apparently very popular at a couple of 62 Met reunion tours, and one of his own bon mots was, I joined the Mets in 62 because I didn't like the idea of being out of baseball. Well, back then, if you were on the Mets, you already were out of baseball. So I guess Vinegar Bend knew as well as anyone when he was released by the Mets that that was really it in 1962. So here's where his post-baseball life, as I said, is very interesting and, you know, depending on your point of view, perhaps a little darker, as Vinegar Bend Mizell went on to have a lengthy political career as a Republican congressman from North Carolina's 5th District. Know your district, everyone. Vinegar Bend represented North Carolina for the 5th District from 1968 to 1975. And interestingly, again, thank you, Wikipedia, he succeeded Nick Galifianakis, uncle of Zach Galifianakis, as the representative for that district. At any rate, you know, I'm thinking Republican from the South in that era. I mean, never mind this era, but in that era, probably a bit of a jerk would be my guess. But, you know, should be open-minded and presume otherwise. So I tried to look into a little bit of his political background. And, you know, one thing I found online was that he, quote, served 3 years in Congress where he fiercely stuck up for the state's tobacco industry. So, yeah, being from such a Republican area, he was probably he was favored in 1974 for re-election, but by most accounts, because of the Watergate scandal, he was surprisingly defeated. However, he did was elected to posts in the administration of both the Ford administration and the Reagan administration. So it was a lengthy political career. Most anecdotal accounts I could find, as I said, about people who encountered him in the 62 Met reunion tours and such things seem to indicate he was a very jocular, outgoing person, which, you know, I guess is not surprising if he went into politics. So I don't know, maybe he was just one of those, you know, likable people with, you know, questionable politics, depending on your point of view. I mean, hey, if RBG could get along with Scalia, I guess, you know, you can like the jovial Southerner, or, well, whatever. Getting off topic here. Let's get back to the baseball. So Baisel passed away in February of 99 at the age of 68 from a heart attack, and obviously made his mark both in Major League Baseball with a notable career and afterwards with a somewhat lengthy political career. The mark he made with the Mets might not have been substantial, but he might not be the best or most lovable Wilmer in Mets history, but he certainly has one of the best nicknames in Mets history, and I wish we had more cool nicknames like that in the majors these days. But yeah, that's Vinegar Ben Maisel, 1962 Met. An unformidable Met with a very unformidable name. Thank you so much for listening to Unformidable. Please go to AmazonAvenue.com for more awesome Mets-related, I should say more amazing Mets-related content. Follow Amazon Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Amazon Avenue. And you could find this and all of our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Original music by Bunga, who is amazing. I'm at Twitter on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFFRR. I'd love your ideas for your feedback, your comments, your suggestions for Unformidable Mets, whether they have cool nicknames or not. And as always, let's go Mets. Thank you.
Hello, it's me, Ashley Carmen.
And I'm Caitlin Tiffany.
And we are the hosts of The Verge's podcast, Why'd You Push That Button?
It's a show that asks the hard, weird, occasionally dumb questions about how your tiny tech decisions impact your social life.
So we're asking questions like, how do you choose your skin tone emoji? And why do you delete your tweets?
Every episode, we talk to both users and experts to get to the bottom of these questions that we're confronted with every day.
Check it out. Subscribe to Why'd You Push That Button on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or anywhere else you love to get podcasts.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
bears in video games,
Pittsburgh Batman,
the hell of being trapped in a group text,
unreliable legal advice.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Like the time Arkansas decided to use a captured feral hog as a mascot, and it escaped and it wound up killing 7 rattlesnakes, a pig, and a coyote.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.
Unless it is.
Damn it.